Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This is Lighthouse Faith Podcast, Moving Forward in Truth and Love. I'm Lauren Green, Chief Religion Correspondent for Fox News Channel and author of the book, Lighthouse Faith. Sad but true, there are an estimated 20 suicides a day among veterans. It's a statistic that is ignored in a world really focused on athletes' mental health right now and politicians' dalliances. But our veterans are hurting, and they have been for decades. But there are those who are offering hope for those suffering from post-traumatic stress and all that entails. They can find relief for their pain and their anguish and depression that's ruining their lives and destroying their relationships. Chad Robichaux is the founder of Mighty Oaks Foundation. It's a program that combines faith and fortitude to help veterans navigate the murky waters of reentering life back home. Nothing is normal after the horrors they witness. Chad knows this because as a Force Recon Marine, he served 8 deployments in Afghanistan. He's also a winning martial arts fighter with a black belt in jiu-jitsu. And he almost became one of those suicide statistics. Because in fighting the traumas of the post-battlefield stress, Chad, as the foreword of his new book says, found an enemy that he could not overcome by just being stronger, faster, and tougher than the adversary. And Chad's book is called An Unfair Advantage, Victory in the Midst of Battle, and he joins me now. Welcome, Chad.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's actually a pleasure to have you on, and I'm sorry I didn't have you on sooner, and this is a mighty book, actually. Why do you call it an unfair advantage?
Well, you know, there's many things that I tried to get well when I came home from Afghanistan and dealt with, you know, anxiety, depression, debilitating panic attacks, near divorce and in a suicide attempt. Of all those things I tried, you know, medication, VA programs, counseling, even success as a professional athlete, none of those things worked until I made a decision to align my life with the life that I believe God created me to live through a relationship with Christ. And I believe that, you know, as I look backwards of my life and the battles that we all face in life, I believe that when you have a relationship with Christ in the front end, you have an unfair advantage to the hardships of life, to overcome those hardships of life and not face the same, you know, pitfalls that I faced by having those things on the front end. And I've been taking the lessons that I've learned on the back end of my hardships and sharing with the next generation of warriors.
Yeah, I mean, I was really touched by the foreword by Lieutenant General Terry Boykin, and he really, really called it his own. I mean, he was talking about his cousin, I guess it was like a cousin second removed because it was his father's cousin, that returned from World War II, really a broken man. I mean, one of these people that, you know, you just grew up, oh, you know, cousin Alden is, you know, kind of a drunk and, you know, just a kind of a crazy person. But, you know, back then they called it shell shock. Back then they sort of had a word for it. It's like, oh, it's just shell shock. But they didn't take it like the seriousness of really what it was, this sort of debilitating depression and horror from, you know, which there was really so little hope for and recovery from, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, different names throughout history, you know, shell shock, nostalgia, soldier's heart, all these different things. I mean, you go all the way back to the Psalms and you see, you know, King David crying out in anguish because of the hardships of battle that he faced in his life. And so many things over the years, but you know, I believe, you know, as the years have went by and people faced PTSD or whatever it was called during their season, the really true way to get well has been through aligning our lives with the lives we were created to live and having a relationship with the Creator. And, you know, I believe there's lots of need for other forms of care. I believe, you know, there's clinical care and there's a need for medication. I'm not opposed to medication, but there's a need for good counseling and psychologists, but and all those different things. But I believe at the core trauma, combat trauma, or just trauma in general, is a spiritual wound. And a spiritual wound does require a spiritual solution. And, you know, like I said, for me personally, I had tried everything else and have, and nothing else worked until I found that spiritual remedy. You know, the VA, if you hear me a lot on media, sometimes I bash the VA because of a, you know, dysfunction of the big government system of the VA. But the truth is the VA does have really good programs to heal people's body. They have great clinicians that really care and want to help and help mentor and people and heal their minds. But until you heal someone's soul, you're never truly going to be well. And I believe the only way to really heal someone's soul is through a relationship with Christ.
Well, I wanted to ask you, like, why is it that the VA, with all its money, with all its power, with all its structure, really has not been effective in dealing with this post-traumatic stress? Why?
Yeah, so if I give you a little bit of history on this, this would definitely sound like a politically candid conversation, but really it's just the facts of how it laid out. In 2001, President Bush signed the Opportunity in Faith Initiative, which allowed faith programs within the VA and DOD. Mm-hmm. And then in 2009, so there's faith in community programs like alternative programs, inner city, and stuff like that. They all existed under President Bush's administration. In 2009, President Obama, and I can't speak for his motive, but he signed an executive order to remove the faith programs from the VA and DOD. And when he did that, at the time, the suicide rate was 16 a day. These faith and programs were really helping. We've seen an immediate kind of uptick in suicides in a period of 2 years. It went from 16 a day to 22 a day. And they had, and during that time, they also had spent billions of dollars in a clinical program, stood up 1,500 new clinical programs in a period of 2 years after removal of faith programs, spiked from 16 to 22. And so in 2016, during the campaign of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, I had an opportunity to speak at a town hall and where President Trump or candidate Trump at the time was, and I was one of six veterans that was allowed to ask him any question I wanted. Mm-hmm. And at this time, I was doing the work at Mighty Oaks and seeing the results of faith programs, and I'd really learned how the VA and DOD had been hamstrung by this executive order President Obama signed. So I could ask it President candidate Trump any question. And the question I asked him was that if he became president of the United States, would he remove that executive order and sign an executive order to bring back faith and an opportunity, the opportunity initiative that President Bush had initially signed. And he said yes. In fact, he said yes and then kept on saying other things and it really spun what he said. And I ended up on Fox, on Bill O'Reilly's show, really standing up for what the president really said. And then that led me into a relationship with being on the VA transition team. And I got to hold President Trump accountable to that choice, that saying yes.
Yeah.
He did that executive order in the Prevents Bill. I was part of I chaired the White House Faith-Based Programs Initiative. And I got to see the Prevents Bill include faith programs. And so we had made a lot of policy changes. Those were just under implementation, however, during the recent election and change of administration. So some of those things may stick. Some of them haven't stuck. The military as a whole has been very, very careful with how they define faith and inclusively of all religions. And it's been very much a topic that people in the military, including the chaplaincy, is afraid of. And fortunately for organizations like mine and Mighty Oaks Foundation, we've been able to go in and do what the military hasn't been able to do. We've been able to go in and do what the VA hasn't been able to do, and really able to go in and define spirituality and what it means and what it doesn't mean. In the last 10 years, I've been able to speak to 250,000 active duty troops at bases around the world, by invitation of bases around the world, and speak on suicide prevention, on combat readiness, on spiritual resiliency. The Marine Corps lets me go to Marine Corps boot camp every quarter for the last 6 years and speak to these young, brand new kids, these young men, women, to them on spiritual resiliency and define what it means, what it meant in my life, and how having a strong spiritual foundation helped me overcome the things that I faced.
You know, I wanted to know how the VA is under the Biden administration. You know, Joe Biden, you know, always touts his Catholic faith and his faith is important to him. How has it been? These faith-based kind of initiatives in the military and the chaplaincies within the military. How has it been under Biden's rule?
Well, you know, it's still a little early to tell because because they've really been quiet about what they've really been, just have not even spoken up on. I can tell you this, the Office of Faith and Opportunity Program in the VA has not been allowed to participate in almost anything since the new administration. They were really getting involved with VSOs, veteran service organizations like mine early during the Trump administration. They were going out to advance. They were interacting with these faith-based veterans programs. And now that the administration has changed, they haven't been shut down. They haven't been defunded. But what they have to do is they have to get White House permission. And what I understand is the only office in the VA that has to get specific White House permission for the spending of their budget or to attend any veterans nonprofit events. And so they pretty much have been, you know, because of red tape and more restrictions on them, they pretty much have been, you know, just unoperative. They haven't really been participating. And so I don't know what they're going to do. They haven't came back and said they're going to sign an executive order to remove faith programs. The office is still open, but we've just seen the lack of participation and the knowledge I have without throwing anybody under the bus and getting to lose their job over this. The knowledge I have is that anything they try to do, they have to get White House permission to do it,
which
is abnormal of any other office in the VA.
You know, you dedicate this book to helping men rise up and be the warriors that God created them to be. What are those warriors when you describe the warriors that God intended for men to be?
Well, I wrote this book specifically to men and to the ladies out there listening and to yourself, I apologize for that. I had to pick a specific audience and I feel like my story really resonates with men. But, I believe we all are created to be warriors and to fight our own, different battles and what the gifts and talents that God has created each of us individually for. We all have strengths and weaknesses and gifts and talents. And in those gifts and talents, I believe that God gave them to us to be part of this spiritual battle that we're born into. Whether you are a person of faith or not, or believe you're in a spiritual battle or not, just because you didn't believe it, don't believe it. You definitely are in a spiritual battle. I mean, you could look at the world around us right now, and it's hard to deny that we're in a very real spiritual battle. And I believe that we're all not just military people, but we were all born in that battle, and we're all equipped to be warriors and use those gifts and talents to win, win this battle for the kingdom of God.
And you say it in the right words too, because men particularly are not inclined to admit that there is a spiritual component to their life, and that, like, you found out being, an officer. I mean, being in the Army, being in the Marines rather, being a service member, that your strength could not take on certain kinds of enemies, the kind that are at within. But yeah. Men have this problem in general as well, that they don't recognize the spiritual battle that's going on within themselves. Isn't that right, though?
That is. When I went to Afghanistan and I thought, we were talking about this before the show. I had 10 years of experience. Mm-hmm. I went to the Marine Corps at 17 years old. I tried to be a reconnaissance Marine. I made it to Force Recon. At all the schools, all the training that you could have, I was a team leader at 3rd Force Recon. I remember watching, when I watched those planes fly under World Trade Center buildings, I'm like, being in my job, being where I was, I'm like, my life is about to change. Like, we're about to actually, and we were a peacetime military. I'm like, we're going to go do what we've been trained to do. And we're going to go, whoever did this, we're going to hold them responsible. And we're going to win. It was no doubt in my mind, because I had just so much training, so much experience. I knew what we were capable of. And I'm like, we're going to set this right. And so going into Afghanistan, I went with so much confidence. And I can tell you that everyone I served with, I tried out for a JSOC task force, with Joint Special Operations Command task force, worked with the premier special operations unit. And the guys I worked with all felt the same way. And we went there and we did our job. And did it well. I can name hundreds of combat missions that I was on to either capture or kill bad guys that were responsible for 9/11 or for terrorist jihadist attacks around the world. And I could those hundreds of missions, I can't name one that was a failure. But I look back at my life and the life of all these amazing special operators that I worked with. And while we were successful on the battlefield, so many of them have killed themselves, suicide. Have had PTSD so bad that some of them are in mental institutions. Many of them are in jail, or alcoholics, drug addicts, or divorced their families, estranged from their children. And I look back now and I think, like, how could we, this group of just such amazing. I was at the pinnacle of special operations. The guys I worked with were just so incredible. Navy Cross recipients, like, you know, Silver Star recipients.
Yeah.
Oh, these amazing people doing these incredible things. How could we accomplish that? And then we come home. We can't keep our mental health together. Can't keep our families together. Can't hold the job. Some of these guys can't hold the job. It's just crazy to me that we could win in one area of battle and not another. And I look at my life and I was when I first started recognizing these symptoms for myself, it really started in an area of just really frustration, mm-hmm. and anger. And I really kind of quantified or that anger and frustration on the battlefield. I'm like, I have to be this way. I have to be violent. I have to be mean. And, right. and my wife was like this, really strong woman of faith. And I'm like thinking, you know, people of faith and men of like in church and stuff like that. Those guys are weak. Like,
yeah, right.
So I really couldn't reconcile masculinity and Christianity.
Yeah. Chad, let's take a break right now here on Lighthouse Faith Podcast. We're talking with Chad Robichaux about his book, An Unfair Advantage, Victory in the Midst of Battle. We're going to take a break right now on Lighthouse Faith Podcast. We'll be right back.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today.
And we're back with Chad Robichaux. He is the author of The Unfair Advantage, Victory in the Midst of Battle. We're talking about veterans battling PTSD and also your Mighty Oaks a foundation which helps men understand their God-given, qualities to be good warriors. And it's not the same kind of thing on the battlefield. And Chad, you were talking about before the break, just what a lot of men brought home from the battlefield, and it wasn't what they expected. Why does this happen? And has it been happening to the level that it is now? I mean, was World War II just as bad as it is today, and we just swept it under the rug, or is there something more wrong today? I mean, are people less spiritual, you know, or are the communities less held together? What's happening today if it's different from, you know, 50 years ago?
I think, you know, to answer that, it's kind of where I left off was me trying to reconcile that the Christianity and masculinity couldn't coexist.
Yeah.
And believing that people of faith are weak. So I chose to put faith out of my life, which I believe left a giant hole in my heart that I feel with rage and hate and anger and bitterness. And over the years, you know, that really took over me. And I look back, like to answer your question about World War II, I believe our culture was different. People had different values. The relationships were people had like fundamentally were raised with strong spiritual foundations. And that made people more spiritually resilient to the hardships of war and things mm-hmm. they do. Mm-hmm. But also there's some pragmatic factors too. I mean, World War II, while it was just horrendous battles, I mean, we talk about, you know, like Omaha Beach or Iwo Jima and things like that. I mean, there's horrendous battles. Yeah. They were shorter scale. I did 8 deployments. There's some people that have done 20 deployments back to back to back. I know guys that are retiring out of the military and never served during a peacetime military, 20 years of
wow.
war. So
wow.
you look at World War II where people went, they did maybe a month or two of actual combat. They took a long ship ride home with their buddies and decompressed. You know, now we're, you know, I would be in Afghanistan and 24 hours later, I'm back home with my wife and children, you know, trying to flip that switch and be, husband and father and just a Mr. Rogers, the friendly neighbor. Like I was still this angry, intense guy and, you know, my family really suffered that having to deal with that no time for transition and anger and irritability and eventually manifest it over time into these physiological symptoms. My arms would go numb, my face would go numb. I feel like my throat was swelling shut and I couldn't breathe. These early signs of panic attacks that I didn't want to address because I didn't want to ask for help because I didn't want people to think I was weak. But, you know, maybe if that was like World War II back then, you would not deploy again, reacclimate. But for me, I had to hold it together and then we go deploy again. And then you deploy again. And in my last deployment after 8 times, I ended up having 12 teammates captured and killed. 10 of them were Afghans, which might not sound like a big deal to some people listening, but these Afghans, these were my brothers. I like lived with them for like 3 years. They were my friends and I loved them and they loved me and would have died for me and I would have died for them. And in fact, I do believe they did die for me. And when they were killed, I was holding on by a thread that thread broke, and I came home and was diagnosed with PTSD and went in a 3-year downward spiral that ended in almost a divorce in my family. Ended with me sitting in a closet with a pistol in my hand in my apartment after I separated from my family, just staring at these pictures. I put the pictures of my family on the floor around me and stared at those pictures, trying to build up the courage to pull the trigger.
And oh my God.
And as oh I'm looking at that, the pictures of my family, really just trying to say goodbye. And, you know, really the reason I ended up there is because this thought came over me and maybe my family would be sad without me, but they would be better off. And you know, unfortunately, that same hopeless thought finds a home in the hearts of over 20 veterans a day. And I really believe that it was not me escaping my pain, but it was like the best thing to do for my family. And, you know, I was committed to taking my life. But every time I put that pistol to my head, Lauren, this overwhelming vision of who's going to find me would, it's like somebody was going to either hear the gunshot or I'd be missing. Someone would find me. And so my son, Hunter, who was 13 at the time, was the only one that had a key to my apartment. And I didn't want him to find me that way. So that was enough to pump the brakes in that moment. But I was in such a dark place. The next day I was back trying to do it again. And it was one morning. I was in that closet with that pistol trying to build up the courage to do it. And my wife unwittingly intervened. She knocked on the door and she announced herself. And when she did, I hid that pistol under a blanket because I was probably ashamed. I don't know why I did it. She would never found it. But I threw the gun under a blanket and I answered the door and I started yelling at her because I was – might sound weird, but I was so upset that she interrupted me trying to kill myself.
Oh.
And I'm just like yelling at her because she and in the middle of me yelling at her, she asked me a question that radically changed my life. I was like, Chad, how could you do everything you did in the Marine Corps? Because she saw me become a recon Marine. She saw me do these schools and training and go to Afghanistan. And then she saw me as an athlete, like training. Mm-hmm. Like, saw a lot of discipline in my life. And she's like, how could you do all of these things? And when it comes to your family, you'll quit. And,
wow. This is a different kind of fight. This is a different kind of fight. And one of the things that, you know, certainly the Bible talks about is that it takes more strength to pull a punch than to put one in. I mean, it takes more strength to hold it back with every ounce of your body wants to lash out and punch. It actually takes more strength not to do it. This is what veterans are dealing with, you know, coming back. And I would think you were talking about how World War II veterans had a little more time to decompress when they're going back over to the United States. You know, they had a month of fighting or whatever it was, a few months, and then had that time to decompress. You're talking about some very practical things. And you're a faith-based organization. Why wouldn't the government pay attention to the things that you're talking about, saying that this needs to happen? You can't keep deploying these men and then expect them to turn the switch off when they walk into their home with two or three little children.
You know, what's interesting is that while we're a faith-based organization, while the government has been so against the faith-based organizations on a unit level, we've had tremendous success in relationships with the military. I mean, like I said, I've spoken to 250,000 active duty troops. Those are all by invitation of units asking us to come. Hey, come speak to our guys. Help them. We want to be able to put these principles into their readiness, you know, for pre-deployment and when they're coming home. So we get to do it on that level. And on the recovery level, you know, our program called a legacy program where guys come to our program and we help them get back on their feet and recalibrate. Most of those guys, half of those guys come on active duty military orders. But that's on a unit level. We're not seeing it systemically at the DOD level and the VA level. And that's where the problem is, because while we're making a big impact, it could be, we could have so much more success in this tragedy of suicide if this would be made available to all of our troops and not just at a unit level.
Yeah. You know, you say that the part of the process is in looking back at your hardships and how does faith help you look differently at those hardships?
Well, for me, when I, you know, after my wife gave me that challenge and I decided to get back in the fight, I knew I couldn't get well on my own and I knew I couldn't do it with the people I surrounded myself by. I needed some help from people that were going to hold me accountable, because I had really surrounded myself by people that told me everything I wanted to hear and not what I needed to hear. And so a step into my life was this mentor who never served in the military, but I met him at a Starbucks coffee shop and he really challenged me and he asked me, you know, what was I going to do to get better? And I gave him a plan. I had written on a paper how I was going to fix my life. He looked at it and he told me I was going to fail. And I remember being really offended by him, but he said, if this plan doesn't have anything to do with your relationship with God, I'm not going to waste your time. I'm not going to let you waste mine. And, you know, I like I said, I tried everything, but I hadn't really given God a chance. And so I did. And we have a saying at Mighty Oaks Foundation, if what you're doing isn't working, then why not try something different? And everything I tried didn't work. It was time for me to try something different. And beyond the decision to surrender my life to Christ, Steve mentored me for an entire year of biblical living. And basically, I intentionally recalibrated my life to biblical living and the life I was created to live by not changing the past, what had happened to me, because I couldn't, but changing how I responded to that. And what I discovered was, as bad as some of the things that had happened to me were in my childhood in Afghanistan, all those things, as bad as those things were, those things didn't lead me to that closet with my pistol in my hand. What led me there was the choices I made in response to those things. And now I'm being mentored in a new way to choose. In fact, the right way to choose, which is biblical living. And through that, I found restoration. I found hope. And ultimately, I found purpose again, which manifested in me having a deep burden on my heart to pay it forward to all these other warriors who were dealing with the same thing. And that resulted in the founding of our foundation.
You have a Bible verse pretty much at the beginning of every chapter. What is your favorite Bible verse to kind of, if you could hear one that would get you right back on path, what would it be?
You know, for me, it's Isaiah 6:8, which is, you know, here am I, send me. And, you know, I know it's like used oftentimes like a motivational verse or people like, but for me, it's when it's here am I, send me, I believe that that calling for me is being called to who God created me to be, to do what God created me to do. And I believe this season of my life, while I love being a four-year recon Marine, I love the opportunity to serve in JSOC in Afghanistan, and I love being a, you know, winning an MMA title belt and all those cool things I got to do in my life, where I believe all those things were a culmination of events that God allowed me to experience to build a platform to do exactly what he created me to do. And it's being where I am now at Mighty Oaks Foundation, sharing the truth about how to get past this veteran crisis that we're dealing with, and to help bring truth to all these warriors that are dealing with these issues on the back end and prepare the next generation on the front end with spiritual resiliency. And so I look at that verse, Isaiah 6:8, here am I, send me. I'm so thankful God gives me the opportunity to serve in his capacity and to do the work that I believe he's called me to do.
This is the good news. We talk about that they're making this book into a film, your story into a film. Is that right?
Yes, they are. You know, we've the book, An Unfair Advantage, is but by the way, it's, you know, President Trump endorsed it. It was in the Commandant Marine Corps Library. Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps endorsed it, as well as Alan West. It's got some great endorsements on it. Producer picked it up, Jim Clock, as a Hollywood producer. And he wanted to make it into a motion picture film, theatrical film. And we just got a director attached to it, David Barrett, who's he's the director of CBS's hit show, Blue Bloods, with Tom Selleck.
Great.
And so just an amazing team. The script came out incredible. I was a little scared to do this, to tear my story into a movie, because obviously there's some very sacred things, like the loss of some of my buddies. But they've done just such a tremendous job of honoring those losses and sacrifices, telling the story, and then ending it with pointing to a solution for other veterans that are watching the film and struggling, or people just in life that are struggling. They're able to point to that solution. And, you know, for us, we run 35 Mighty Oaks programs a year. We do over $4 million a year in programming, all free to our troops and veterans and spouses, first responders. And so we want to get the word out through every outlet we can that these programs are available. And a motion picture, a film like this one, we really get the word out, be able to garner support for people that want to support us, and be able to reach out to people who need the help. So I'm so excited about it. I was terrified about it at first, but now I'm excited.
Well, I'm excited about it too. I just hope that they keep the faith element in there, because what you're saying, the truth about getting better, is you got to keep God in the picture. You got, and not even in the picture, he's got to be the picture. Because that's going to be the authority. And I hope they keep that part in, because so many of the films, when Hollywood gets hold of it, you know, they take out the faith element and they really kind of destroy the whole meaning of the book. Are they keeping that in it?
They are. They are. And I can tell you, they did it in a way that it's not a, I didn't want to make a Christian film that would only appeal to churchgoers. I wanted it to reach the people who it's the message is intended to reach, those who are lost, those who are broken, those who are struggling, those who need the hope. So they've done it in that way to where it's raw, it's gritty. It's as, I mean, my story is raw.
Yeah.
It's ugly. I mean, as killing and adultery and, and broken families and broken hearts, and those things need to be told. But the contrast to that is the rescue and restoration of my life, the relationship of Christ, that needs to be told as well. And the contrast to that really tells the story. And they did it in the script and the way that it happened. And it's in such a way that I think it'll appeal to, you know, those who are Christians and those who are not, to learn to both see a story. And so they did it in really a way that I think anyone will enjoy it and want to watch it and be challenged by it.
Well, that's fantastic. Chad Robichaud, the book is called An Unfair Advantage, Victory in the Midst of Battle, of the Battle. And boy, I'll tell you, it really has it's going to resonate with a lot of people, veterans especially, but even if you're not a veteran, it'll resonate with you. And also, I'm sure there are people you know that need to be reading this, family members of veterans, anyone, and even non-veterans can benefit from it, because it certainly has a lot to do with the spiritual warfare that all of us are really facing, you know? So I want to thank you so much, Chad, for being on Lighthouse Faith Podcast, and I thank you so much. And when people want to find out more about the Mighty Oaks program, how do they find out about it?
We go to mightyoaksprograms.org, and you could at mightyoaksprograms.org. If you're a veteran or active duty spouse, first responder, you want to apply, you can apply right there. We pay for everything in the programs, including travel. So we even cover your travel. It's very easy to apply. If you want to support those programs, so we can pay for others to go, you can also donate there at mightyoaksprograms.org. And if you want to see our documentary to learn more, I Am Second's hosting it right now. It's at iamsecond.com/neverfightalone.
Wow. Thank you so much, Chad, for being on Lighthouse Faith Podcast.
Thank you so much. It's a blessing to be on.
And thank you so much for listening to Lighthouse Faith Podcast. I'm Lauren Green. Have a blessed day.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer Podcast, featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites, like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.